Welcome back to Let's Get Our Ship Together, a queer woman of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Aphrodite.
And I'm Amira.
And we are going to debrief the last two episodes of Charmed Season 1. 21, Red Rain, and Episode 22, The Source Awakens. Spoilers galore! We hope you've watched the season finale. What were your takeaways, Amira? What did you think of the way that the season ended?
I have some conflicted feelings. I thought it was really good when I compare it to the original series. Like, they really up the ante, up the drama. Like, this was a show, you know what I mean? Like, of epic proportion. And I think that the original series did not have any sort of storyline this early on, you know, with the stakes this high. In that regard, I was really happy with, like, the drama level of it. The writing with Macy's character was... They were trying for something. I had a few caveats with it, to be honest.
Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, it was about sisterly love in the end and belonging and all of that, which was, you know, great morals to the story. I did like that overall they seemed to have their love interest featured somewhat equally, despite the fact that they played different parts in the story. Although in the second, the very last episode, we barely saw Nico. And I was really let down by that. I was expecting some sort of grand finish.
I was super let down by that.
So what about you? Your overall impression?
So I agree with you. I like that they sort of took everything that people thought they would expect from the reboot. And they were like, you know what? We're going to give you a whole shit ton of plot advancement. We're going to blow everything the fuck up. We're going to get rid of the elders. We're going to come up with a whole new world order for the series. Obviously, I was not a fan, or I did not really follow the original series. But the elders and that sort of hierarchy was stretched out over the entirety of the series. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from what I remember.
This time they just sort of squeezed all of that into a single season and are like, boop, we're going to do things a whole new way. I think they were trying to build off of the original series, but also take it in a totally new direction, which is what I think a reboot should do, actually. Take some of what we know, but like do something fresh and different with it. Take it in a direction we wouldn't have otherwise expected. So I did like, especially, I have to say, the second to last episode, Red Rain. I thought that was a good episode. The actual season finale, I had mixed feelings about. And we can go into that a little bit later, but I kind of view this as like a two-part season finale.
I agree.
Episode 21 felt like a season finale. Apocalypse happening. Everything is happening on an epic scale. People are dying. Sacrifices are made.
And then huge cliffhanger.
That cliffhanger at the end. And I was like, oh, shoot. This is the season finale.
Now, here's a question. Do you think... I mean, you said that they, you know, sort of started with the premise of the original series and then really made it into its own show by the end of the season. Do you think that that was a way for them to be like, okay, we are really firmly distinguishing this as like a separate, like a reboot, but a new, unique show? Or was it because that they were worried that it might be canceled? You know, either they were trying to like make it like super good just to make sure it wouldn't be canceled, or just like, oh, just in case it does get canceled, let's just make this awesome story for one season. I mean, I don't know. I feel like it was kind of a risky show to pitch in the first place, and, you know, things on the CW.
Yeah, that's a good question. Did they write the season finale as if it could have been like an ending to the show? Thinking about it, if the show had been canceled, they would have wrapped up everything except for the love interest stuff. It would have been relatively neat, even though cancellations are never nice and neat. But I mean, they got renewed, so I'm kind of wondering, like, they must have received the renewal before they filmed those final scenes.
I would hope so. I'm not sure exactly what their filming schedule would be, but that seems pretty typical.
Yeah, because otherwise they would have had things end in a different way for both Mel and Maggie and their significant others. Yeah, so like, why don't we talk about what happens in episode 21, Red Rain? Like, so we're in the hospital space. Mel sees Nico being wheeled in. And you know me, I don't like gore. And I'm just like, oh God, there was just so much like grossness, like the vomit and like the blood. And I'm just like, oh, like really? Did they have to do that? Oh, I mean, whatever. It was pretty gruesome. It felt like a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, I think that's like the feeling they were kind of going for. This harbinger virus was spreading throughout Hilltown. And of course, when they see Nico, they assume that she also has it. Mm-hmm. And Harry tries to use his white lighter power to heal her, and he can't, which could still be typical of the virus. But when Maggie reads her mind, she hears all of these thoughts flooding it, and it's thoughts with, like, her and Mel and like the conversations they've had and things from her past, and they realize she doesn't have the virus. It's the spell that they did on her that's affecting her mind. And Harry says that she could have an aneurysm. And so they're like, oh my God, you know, Mel is clearly like, shit, what have I done? Like, you know, she didn't realize it would have these repercussions because, again, she didn't take her time and do the research before doing this crazy life-altering spell. Anyway, we'll never forgive her for that, obviously.
Right? So Maggie looks at her chart and they did a CAT scan and they were like, the amygdala and another part of the brain are inflamed, which is where the brain stores memories or something like that. And I think that's when they're piecing it together, like, oh, because Mel finally told Nico the truth. Like, maybe that triggered that response. I mean, we did see Nico collapse right after she went home.
From having that conversation. Or it almost seems more like a brain, like, internal medical problem where, like, your brain is trying to understand two different realities and it's literally, like, overwhelming your synapses or whatever. Like, it's just, like, that's why Harry was, like, she could have an aneurysm. She started bleeding uncontrollably. Like, it's, it just seems like her mind simply cannot handle what it's trying to understand.
So it was disappointing that we didn't really have any lines from Nico because she's in this like other state. She's like laying in her hospital bed. They're all three huddled around Nico's bed in the hospital, and Nico's got like these like lines coming out from her nose, and they're kind of like crusted red blood. And I'm just thinking,
I'm like, nobody cleaned her up.
Exactly. Oh my God. Like, and I'm like, Greta, this is on you. Greta, this is on you. What, you couldn't clean up your girlfriend's face? Like, come on.
Well, I wasn't sure if she had just arrived at the hospital or if she had already been there and stepped out of the room. That wasn't clear to me. It almost seemed like she just arrived when she came in. That was my assumption, but I'm not really sure. But yeah, she was very annoyed to see Mel, and she very coldly says, it's close friends and family only. And I'm like, well, you're not even married, so. They all leave. They didn't start a fight or something. Mel assumes that Nico should be protected from the virus by the ring, but when she goes back to the hospital, and that's when she freezes time to go into the room to check on her, she finds that, of course, Greta had taken it off. Which, from Greta's point of view, I get it. Like, you're like some other like hot, cool lesbian is like friends with your fiance, and suddenly they're spending a lot of time together, and then she gives her a ring. Like, you know, I get how it looks.
We actually get that little scene. So after Maggie, Mel, and Harry all leave the hospital room, we get a close-up of Greta at Nico's bedside. She looks at Nico's hand, sees that the ring is there, and you could see her face react a little bit. So I did like that Greta got a line. Like, she got a little bit of interaction with the other characters.
Right. But she's mainly just there to be in the way, right? Like, she's in the way of Melko happening and of Nico staying protected. She's just in the way. She's an obstruction in the plot.
And like, she doesn't understand why the ring is there. She's bitter and resentful. Like, my girlfriend's in a coma, my wedding is off, and she's still wearing that goddamn ring. Like, I can't imagine how painful this must have been for Greta, actually, to have all of this happen.
Oh, for sure.
Because like, the way that she and Nico left things was that they were on bad terms because Greta was like, all suspicious. Like, why are you spending all this time with Mel? What's going on? They must have had some kind of fight. And we also don't even know whether Nico told Greta about Nico's kiss with Mel.
Oh, probably not.
In the last conversation between Mel and Nico, Nico says we have to talk about this, but then Mel interrupts her. Like, Nico was about to say something, Mel interrupted and said, blah, 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 I love you. And so, and then Nico reacted. And so whatever it was, Nico went over to tell Mel, we actually don't know what that was, and we don't know whether Nico fessed up to Greta about her kiss with Mel.
Yeah, or maybe she even had broken up with Greta, and Greta's just, like, refusing to accept it. You know, I mean, Nico is in no state to tell anybody, like, hey, this isn't my fiancé anymore.
Exactly. So we don't know what Greta and Nico went through, because it all happened off-screen, and I feel like, I mean, I get that it's the apocalypse, so we have to focus on that, but you know what? Some dyke drama would have been nice.
Yeah, or at least I would have even settled for, you know, a tell and not show in this case. Like, but we weren't even told what happened, let alone shown. Yeah. So it's just, it's up in the air and we are just burning to know what happened. But anyway, so Mel, when she went to the hospital, finds that not only Nico doesn't have a ring, but Nico is infected and like acting aggressively. I mean, she freezes her as she was like attacking some of the nurses or whatever, you know, they're like trying to hold her down. Basically, all shit is hitting the fan everywhere, and I was very stressed out watching this episode because it was one of those classic, like, oh, how are they going to get themselves out of this one? But it was like, it's affecting so many people that it's like, you know, that level of stress of like, oh my God, they really have to figure this out. In the end, Galvin uses that whatever spell he was going to use to cure Macy, and he uses it to save everyone from the infection.
Yeah.
But knowing that it would kill him in the process, he sacrificed himself willingly. I could not believe that that was the intended plot line with that. I mean, I have to assume that when they had that whole plot line where he came back from his trip and he had this spell that could cure Macy, they already knew that's what he was going to use it for in the end. I don't know. I mean, do they usually write that far ahead? I feel like it wasn't that many episodes to like...
Oh. I'm sure that you have to plan stuff out and, like, build towards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, first of all, like, my heart goes out to Galvin because he's an epidemiologist. And, like, epidemiologists are heroes in their own right. Just saying.
Absolutely. Missed doctor in public health.
Yeah, he's, like, a public health hero. He sacrificed himself so that other people could be cured of this totally unknown virus infection, whatever. And, like... And as we find out in the following episode, he was glad that he did it. He didn't have regrets about it.
Yeah, he had accepted his fate.
Kudos to Galvin. And so you think that, well, maybe the day is saved. But then other shit happens, like, you know, Fiona dies. I was a little disappointed that Fiona didn't get more of a redemption arc. Like, some of the deaths that happened in this episode felt, like, sad. I felt like Charity's death and Fiona's death were both kind of, like, sad and not... built up the way that I think their characters deserved. Galvin's death, there was emotional buildup to that, and there were consequences afterwards, and I liked that. But there were multiple character deaths in this episode, and it's kind of hard to have a two-part season finale where multiple characters die, and where all three or multiple of those character deaths are given the time and the screen time and the emotional power that they deserve.
Right, right. I think I was mostly frustrated that Galvin is the one who died and not, like, Parker. You know what I mean? Like, they killed off the black male love interest.
Again, yes.
But because this is such a diverse show already, I'm, like, willing to cut them a tiny break for it just because it wasn't, like, you know, he was shot dead by police or something. It was, like...
He chose to do it.
He willingly sacrificed himself to save an entire town of people from, like, a demonic virus. It was definitely a well-written storyline. Oh, yeah, about Fiona not having that good of a redemption arc. You know who she kind of reminds me of? And I promise it's not just the blonde hair. She reminds me of Callisto from Xena, where she just, you know, she has something happen to her. She's so unforgiving, so full of hate, just blindly wants revenge on all those who wronged her and doesn't care who she has to kill to get her way. You know, she seems so, like, just purely evil, and I think that that's, you know, the writers wanted us to see her as somebody who was irredeemable, and so death was the only option, and that we would be, like, cheering for her death, like, oh great, now this awful person is gone. But like you, I wanted more from that character, and I wanted that redemption arc. I mean, if they could give that to Callisto, I feel like,
yes, but
you know, where it was like several seasons long, I do wish that that storyline had a different ending and that there had been something between the sisters, you know, one dying to save the other or something like that. I don't know. I was a little, it was a little anticlimactic, I guess.
The show is so much about the trauma of women. Mm-hmm. Fiona is clearly someone who was used by other people, and she was lashing out at the world around her because she'd never wanted that to happen ever again to anyone. Right. She wanted to destroy magic. Because she felt like magic would be used is a source of abuse. She's kind of right, you know? It is.
Yeah, depending on who wields it. So, you know, she's like, who decides who gets to wield that power? Wouldn't it be better if it didn't exist? Which is definitely, like, a philosophy to have.
Right. And because I think the show has otherwise done a good job dealing with women and their trauma, and we get that with Macy's arc in the season finale, I kind of thought that they would do something more with Fiona? Like, is she gonna heal? Will she ever heal? And she never got to. I was pretty bummed about that. I mean, I also was like, why Galvin? Like, why did he have to die? Yeah. I mean, there have been a number of shows now where they kill off the black male love interest, and I'm like, okay, goodbye, I'm done, right? But I think in this case, because he chose to do it and then he was brought back to life and he still wanted to do it, I'm like, this makes sense. It wasn't an accident. It was a choice that he made and that he would make again if he was put in the same set of circumstances. And so I don't feel like it's falling into the same set of tropes that other shows have fallen into when black male love interests have been killed off.
True, true. Yeah. I also think that because it ended in Parker leaving, you know what I mean, because if it ended, if Maggie and Parker got their happily ever after and the other two sisters didn't, I would have been really pissed off to say the least. But of course Parker is still alive and he could still come back, you know. I don't know what that's going to be next season, and frankly I don't really care, but I feel bad because Galvin can never come back now. Like, he is for sure dead, and they explored that plot line of like, oh, but we could bring him back with magic, and then it was like, no.
Galvin's a Melko shipper. He gave his life so that Nico could live, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he gives his life up, he falls to the ground, and then all of a sudden, like, a wave of, like, something goes through the hospital, and Nico calms down, and whatever it was that was in these patients leaves their bodies.
Nico is also cured of the virus, but she's still in a coma because she's got that, like, memory thing messing up her brain, like having these memories flooding back from the alternate timeline, blah blah blah. I don't know how much detail you want to go into the scene, but when Macy takes on the source, I got chills in that scene.
Oh, same.
I mean,
same.
Alistair, the bio dad, had given the dagger because he fit the qualifications of who could take on the source, but he's not the only one who fit those qualifications, as Macy so aptly remembered. So she uses her telepathy to pull the dagger out of his body and stab herself with it. And I gasped. I was like, oh my God. I couldn't believe it. And then she takes on the source. Her eyes are glowing. Her skin is dewy. Her hair is magnificent. Those details don't matter. But God, she just looked like amazing in these last two episodes. I was like, Macy, you are annoying me, but I'm feeling your looks. She takes on the source. She goes and cures Nico. Oh, first she kills the bio dad, Alistair guy, because he's like, suddenly, like, oh, you know, like, kneeling down to her power, and she's like, bitch, I do not have the time of day for you. Yeah. Yeah, she cures Nico. I don't know what end of the spectrum she's on now, what she can remember, what she can't. In terms of the alternate storylines, in terms of what happened with the virus, Macy says that she wiped everyone's memories in Hilltown, so no one knows what happens. And then she's telling her sisters and Harry, catching them up, that she did all this. And then she says there's one more thing she has to do. And she doesn't tell them what it is. But she goes back to the rooftop where Galvin did his ritual, and she brings him back to life. And I mean, I knew from the second that she did it that it was a bad idea. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. This is not right. This is not right. She has too much power. There's something going on. Even in that scene where she was telling them everything that she had done, and they were like trying to talk to her, and she was just, like, not hearing it, I was like, ugh, this is not right. And it turns out that scene was actually a pivotal point in Macy's character development, because we revisit that scene in the next episode. Episode 22, The Source Awakens. The Source, of course, being inside Macy still. Yeah, this episode was very Melko light. So I don't know how much of the actual content of the episode that you want to talk about, but Macy basically takes control, alters timelines again and again to try to bring back their mom, but of course it keeps messing things up. And so I noticed that, you know, of course the sisters, when they had to remember what happened, or they were trying to remember what happened, the sisters and Harry, they had that same, like, brain thing effect that Nico was having when she was trying to remember the alternate timeline.
Oh, where their nose starts bleeding.
They have that, like, intense headache. They're almost going to collapse. At the end, after all this drama, Mel says to Macy, you know, we saw what you did, messing with the cosmic balance, making people's choices for them. What I did to Nico was just as bad. Mm. I owe it to her to let her go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I mean, at the beginning of that conversation, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be about Nico. I thought she was going to say, I owe it to her to apologize, to give her space, this, that. And then she said to let her go. And I was like, oh, is that it?
what is this?
Like, that's bullshit. That's it? They've decided the fate of Melko in that single line? Oh my god. So now I don't really know where they stand, because so there's one last scene of Melko where Mel sees Nico at a cafe and Nico waves to her, so she obviously recognizes her. And again, I don't know what timeline she's remembering, if it's just the one, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how much she remembers, but she's wearing the ring. Mel freezes time, and then Nico waves to her and, like, sees her because time is frozen around her.
Yeah, and Nico doesn't look angry. She looks perfectly fine and healthy, and she doesn't look angry at Mel anymore. She looks like she's kind of
right
at some kind of peaceful resolution, because she kind of looks at Mel and smiles.
Yeah, like, hey, friend, you know? Like, she definitely, I mean, and she's wearing the ring, so she definitely remembers at least up to that point in the new timeline, right? Like,
yeah,
where they met and she gave her that ring to protect her. She wasn't shocked to see time frozen around her. But does she remember the old timeline? Does she remember even what Mel said to her about the old timeline?
She must remember. I read it as she remembers both timelines, because Macy cured her of the brain problem.
Right.
And the look on Nico's face, again, we didn't have very much content to go off of, but the look on Nico's face made it seem like she was okay with everything. Like, yeah, she was okay with how things unfolded, and she wasn't angry. And that to me means that she also remembers that she was in love with Mel. And she kind of looked at Mel with like a, it was a knowing look. Like, I know you, I see you, kind of look.
Yeah, and I feel like this is just as cruel as her original decision to create an alternate timeline in which they never met, because she's still doing it without Nico's consent. Now Nico knows. I mean, imagine, like, she's now on the same level that Mel was on when she did this initial spell, where she remembers everything from before, everything they'd been through, where they were at in their relationship, and now she remembers her, like, new timeline, and so who knows what she's thinking. Lord knows she needs a therapist or some processing or something. But now Mel, without another word, is choosing to just let her go. There's like a van backing up, and so she unfreezes time, and then when the van moves, she's gone. And Nico's like clearly looking for her, like, huh, where did she go? But
that frustrated me, that the way they ended that. And I'm just thinking, Nico's wearing the ring, which to me says Greta's not in the picture anymore.
Well, I would hope not.
Right? I mean, if she's wearing the ring, and she's looking at Mel the way that she's looking at Mel, it must mean that the wedding is off and it's not going to happen. It's funny because in that little, like, they're walking through the cemetery, the three girls, and Macy says, you ready to give things a go with Nico? Macy's basically saying what all of us are thinking. Now is the time. Give things a go with Nico.
Yeah. Ugh.
And for her to not do it because she thinks it's what she owes Nico. What you owe Nico is a fucking apology. But
yes,
disappearing on her, that's not what you owe her. It may not even be what Nico wants.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. If Mel has learned anything from this, it should be that you shouldn't decide what Nico needs. You don't decide what she needs. You don't decide what you owe her. If you want to know, you should talk to her.
Exactly.
And then see if she's like, hey, fuck off, then you're like, okay, you know what, I'm gonna give her some space. Or just let her go or whatever. But if she sees you in a cafe and, like, smiles and waves at you benignly, I feel like that's a welcome invitation to at least try to have a conversation and just like, see where you're at, see how she's feeling. I mean, god, Mel, isn't your heart just aching? Like, even if I should owe it to someone to just quote-unquote let them go, I feel like if I were in that very specific position, I would really want to have a conversation with them, because even after everything Mel's been through, it would be hard to let go of those feelings, of that relationship. I mean, they were, like, about to start getting together again, for God's sake. We know Mel still loves her. She said it. I don't know.
The thing that frustrates me about this moment is that I'm like, Mel, have you not learned anything?
She hasn't.
She's basically guilty of the same thing, which is making decisions for Nico without involving Nico. And that, in this instance, it's like she's making the decision to not be with Nico and to, quote unquote, let her go instead of asking Nico what Nico wants.
And, like, Nico's a fucking PI. You think she's not going to find you if she wants to see you again? You think you're going to let her go? Come on. Come on. I hope to God Nico will be tracking her down in the beginning of season two to be like, hey, what the hell? We should talk. I mean, like, this is the first time where I was like, is a lesbian even writing in this show? Because y'all know we need to debrief, right? Like, we need to. We need to. We need to debrief. We need to have debriefs about our debriefs. We need to process our processing. Have feelings about our feelings. I mean, God. I can't believe. I'm sorry. I'm still up in arms about this. The only reason I have been able to sleep at night is because I know that Parker is not with Maggie. I was like, if they killed Galvin and made Mel leave Nico, and then Parker and Maggie still got a happy ending, I would have rioted. It would have been a scene.
Oh my God, no, unacceptable. I'm frustrated because, you know, several episodes ago we were like, what if Jada comes back in the season finale? And so that clearly didn't happen. So I'm like, well, is Jada going to get her chance? Because, okay, so the great thing about Galvin's storyline is you think Galvin is a coward. Like, he tells Macy, I don't want any part of this. It's so awful. Like, I'm terrified of what I'm capable of doing if I let magic into my life.
Yeah, which makes sense for what happened to him. Yeah.
His body was used without his consent to commit horrible acts.
Yeah, consent is a running theme in this show. I like it.
I mean, me too. But like, and so he's like, no, I don't want to be a part of this. And like, Macy sort of respects that and like leaves him out of it. But then Galvin sort of like, he decides to do the bravest thing possible. And I want something like that for Jada, because I want her to have her moment in the sun too. Because she's been through a whole shit ton of stuff this season too, although we didn't get to see most of it on screen. And I want that for her. So there are a couple of characters where I felt like we got that, and then others where we didn't. And it's really a shame that like so much of the redemption stuff was devoted to Parker, because you know who else needed redemption? Fiona.
She most of all, if anything. I mean,
what they did to her was so awful. Yeah, so I'm like sad that Jada didn't get it. But what it means is that if Jada does come back, and I feel relatively certain that she will in some kind of guest or recurring episode capacity, if not, like, probably not as a series regular. But she will come back in some way to, like, mess things up for Malco, and then that'll be some fun dyke drama. That's what I anticipate.
Ooh. So you think they're going to keep the triangle going with Nico and Jada? You don't think they'll introduce any new... Honestly, I think that could happen with Maggie, where maybe she meets somebody new, and then Parker comes back, and that becomes a love triangle. Macy, you know, Galvin's gone, so she has to start from scratch. Mel, maybe they're just going to keep the two. Mel got two love interests this season, okay?
Yeah, fair.
So I think it's possible that they'll just keep the same two girls, unless, I mean, I don't, maybe they'll keep one and introduce another. I don't know. But it seems like both of them are out of her life, so it's almost like a reintroduction, because they ended the season. All of them, all of their relationships ended in one way or another. All their love interests, you know, the ties are severed.
Yeah, I mean, and now they get to be the new elders or something, you know?
Yeah, which was not at all what I was expecting the ending to be when they came back and everyone was, like, at their house.
That was kind of cute. That was kind of cute.
It was cute. But it was, like, a very, like, bow tie ending. Not too much of a cliffhanger. I mean, of course, like, I want to see how things are going to be, but that almost seemed like a series finale, didn't it? Like,
they did give us a bow tie ending. If they'd given us a cliffhanger, that would have been, like, okay, this is definitely, we're going to get a second season, but they probably set things up in anticipation of just in case it didn't get renewed. I mean, obviously it did, so it's fine. I wanted to bring up one more thing, because you talked about how Macy doesn't have a love interest. That moment between Macy and Harry, where Macy suddenly has the power to read Harry's mind when they were sitting on the bed together. And then during the cemetery scene, when Harry goes up to Macy and says, I just think it's a gross violation of trust to read your white lighter's mind or something like that. And Macy's like, well, do you want to talk about what I heard? And then he was like, no. Like, he was like, no. I think there are Harry and Macy shippers out there. And I actually think that it makes sense, because it avoids the need to bring in another outside character. And it puts Macy with somebody we already trust.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense in terms of, like, I would expect that from the writers. I'm not sure if I would be shipping them necessarily. I mean, I feel like Harry apparently has a bad habit of dating the witch he's supposed to be protecting, or just like dating witches in general. I mean, like, you know, come on, like, what? He has a problem, you know. It's like a clear pattern.
Witch fetish?
And then,
is that what this is?
Yeah. And now it's charity. An elder fetish too, right? Because it's charity.
God.
And then now Macy is one of is an elder. And then
basically,
and
Harry
Fiona.
Is
I don't
bottom.
Know if they had a relationship, but he is.
Harry is totally a bottom.
Oh my
bottom.
God. He is. He's a polite British bottom.
Yeah, he's into like badass powerful witches. Who, like, outrank
mm-hmm,
him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's into.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. The only thing I wouldn't like about Harry being her love interest is... Well, not the only thing, but the biggest thing is that just from, like, a principled fact point of view, they killed her black male love interest and they're going to replace him with a white male. You know? I don't know. You could say, like, well, don't we have enough diversity? And I say, no!
Never!
We never do.
Never.
So... Who dares ask that question? Not until we have a show with literally no white people and honestly no straight people, will I
say. Yeah, yeah. We're
but,
waiting for the day.
You know, maybe if Harry were like interested in her, but she was getting another love interest, you know, like a human love interest or something like that. I don't know.
So let's talk about like how we felt about the season finale, because I know we just talked about the ships, but like we both had kind of mixed feelings about the season finale. It was structured very differently from any other episode in the season. And a lot of this season finale revolved around Macy's psyche and her deepest insecurity mm-hmm. and her fear mm-hmm. of being abandoned by her sisters after having already been abandoned by her mother. I like that we got this sort of deep dive into Macy and understanding what she's afraid of, what motivates her decision-making, her desperate, desperate need for love, for familial love, and her desperate need for a sense of belonging. So I'm glad that we got that. I think what was really hard was, it kind of reminds me of when somebody starts to spiral, and when like when somebody with like trauma or like is being triggered, they start to do this downward spiral. And because they don't know how to control their spiraling, they just hurt everyone around them. It's sort of like, you know, the whole hurt people thing. Like, at the end of the day, Mel and Maggie were like, we're going to be with you, like, no matter what. We're not going to leave you, no matter what. And, you know, I kind of, and I don't know if this goes against what we wish we could see on screen, which is, like, true unconditional familial love. But... I guess I'm always worried about, like, the idea of, like, we're never going to leave you no matter what. But what if that person is causing harm to you? Like, which is exactly what Macy's doing, you know? I think they knew that what Macy needed to hear was that she wouldn't be abandoned. Like, in that moment, that's what Macy needed to hear in order to calm down and to be back in control again. And I will say that that scene where all three of them, like, sister of time, sister of space, sister of emotion. And then they like
cool.
combine their like brain waves or their foreheads line up. And then they like, you know, I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a really impactful scene. And yes to sisterly bond. Yes to sisterly love. But I think when it comes to like dealing with trauma and the risk of hurting the ones you love because you don't know how to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm, and it's often very dangerous to have your family members go in harm's way to try and pull you out of your own downward spiral.
A good takeaway is that you don't owe anybody unconditional love and no one owes you unconditional love. I think this storyline only worked because of the very specific situation, which was that Macy's demon side and like the source being in her kind of amplified these insecurities to like grotesque levels.
Yes.
So that's why the sisters were like, I like that they weren't prioritizing their concern over the power of three being broken. They were really like, we need to save Macy.
Yeah.
You know, like we need to save her from herself. So I agree that it could be sort of a messy moral of the story if you try to like, you know, apply its relevance to real life. Yeah. But
this is, you know, the source.
Yeah. I mean, when magic is involved, you know, kind of all logic is out the window, right? I guess my main problem with it was that Macy, and of course, you know, I haven't been through what she's been through, even on like a subliminal level. So I feel like I was just confused that that was a continuing insecurity for her, because I felt like Maggie and Mel were always, you know, you meet this girl and she's like, hey, I'm your sister. That's going to be a rocking shock to your world, right? Like, you have an older sister that your mom didn't tell you about. And then, you know, after the initial shock settles, they like welcome her into the family.
Yeah.
Even after Macy, remember that episode where she like waltzes in and is like, oh, I tested our DNA and actually Maggie and I are full siblings and Mel is the half sister, and just expects them to be like as happy as she is to hear about it. And they're just like, what the fuck? Like, A, you tested our DNA without our consent, and B, why are you telling us this like devastating news that is, again, rocking the core foundation of what we think of our family to be? And they still, you know, made it through that and like,
yeah,
kept treating Macy as like, you know, a member of the clan. Like, she's part of the sisterhood. It annoyed me that this insecurity was still deep down inside of her in the first place, because after all they've been through, I just can't believe that she would still question that. Like, why was that the insecurity that the demon side was feeding on and not, you know, some other personality thing?
It was a convenient thing for the writers to do, to have Macy have this deep insecurity that forces the sisters to all come together again. But it was not paced or planned out carefully enough, in that if indeed Macy had this insecurity, then we should have had some kind of sign that she was still feeling insecure. I actually thought her insecurity was not that she would be abandoned. Her insecurity is about her demon side being stronger than her human side, because that's all the stuff that Harry, Mel, and Maggie have been saying, like, are you sure you can control this side of you? Those were the hints that were being dropped, not you're not actually one of us. It was, we actually think on some level you're just a demon. Like, if that was the fear, if that was the insecurity, that would be much more consistent with what we've seen in the last several episodes.
I agree completely. Even with all the shortcomings, in our opinions, of this episode, I still think I like the writing of the show overall. I think that maybe in this season they tried to take on a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And again, that could be because they were just trying to really prove themselves with the reboot. Maybe they were worried it would get canceled, so they just wanted to kind of give it all they got in the first season. But, you know, on some level, like a show, when a show progresses, you have to sort of up the ante every once in a while, right? Like, it's not necessarily each season has to be bigger than the last, but I mean, if you're starting your first season climaxing in an apocalypse,
yeah,
and the entire, you know, magical, leadership hierarchy, like, dying and, you know, all of this stuff happening, it's like, I don't know. I'm not really sure where to go from there. So I'm excited to see what the writers have in store for the next season, 'cause I'm hoping that they have like an equally awesome plan. But I'm, I guess, a little bit nervous because I don't want them to keep up this pattern of packing too much in a season. I mean, I think that, you know, again, I really was strongly reminded of Callisto when I watched, you know, with Fiona's storyline. And I feel like that could have been stretched out longer and she could have actually gotten a redemption arc. I think that it's still not too late to bring back Jada and give her some more storyline, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the ones who died, I mean, it's obviously too late, so.
Yeah, so I agree with you completely about this. I think what this final episode revealed is that the writers wanted to pull out all the stops, but for season one, and they didn't need to do it. They did, like, 20 stops, but they really could have stopped at 15. Yeah. Like, they could have been like, oh, yeah, here's, like, we're going to do this, 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 and that. And so what ends up happening is, like, character deaths that fall a little bit flat because we weren't given the sort of emotional buildup towards each death, right? And we have, like, multiple sacrifices of major characters in the same episode, but not any time to grieve them because there's so much plot happening. So if they'd really slowed things down a little bit, so all the stuff that happened over the last 22 episodes, if they stretched out over two seasons, I think it would have been stronger.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And if they had taken away some of the time, I have to say it, Maggie and Parker, they got too much screen time. Too much screen time where nothing was happening.
Exactly. So I really resented that. And I am, just because, like, what did it do? We didn't need to see him shirtless that much. I just don't get it.
I know. I mean, if I want to see a shirtless twink, I'm going to head to a gay bar. I mean, Jesus.
Right, like, right.
Like, were we supposed to be impressed? I don't understand.
Yeah, so I wish that the pacing had been better. And, like, and I will say that, like, usually most shows, season one is a little uneven. So I'm cutting it a little bit of slack. I don't think this season was uneven. I think it was just too dense. There were too many things happening in the whole season. And I mean, they did spread it out over 22 episodes. But I almost wonder if they should have done, like, 10 episodes. And then, like, 10 episodes season one where, like, the cliffhanger is Fiona in some shit. And then the second half of the season where you see Fiona's slow decline and then her, like, you get some kind of healing, but then she has to die because she did terrible things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would have been cool too. Or, I mean, yeah, because I think a 22 episode run was well done. And I think that throughout the season, you know, every episode I felt like, for the most part, stuff was happening, right? Like, stories were progressing. Not every storyline progressed in every episode, but there were no, like, filler episodes. You know what I mean? Like, this was all action. Mm-hmm. And I think that they need to, in the upcoming seasons, just try to better prioritize what they want to progress and what action is happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to focus on their love lives as well as their magical, whatever, obligations, then you need to, like, kind of sort out the time for those respectively and make sure you know what the focus of the overall story is. Because I felt like a lot of the magical stuff was just sort of jam-packed in the end there. Like, it was all just, like, happening really quickly. And so, you know, when I think about, like, the pacing at the beginning of the show compared towards, like, the last, like, five episodes or so, it just, like, really ramped up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's something that they could work on. It's sort of like, I think what you want are, like, one or maybe two emotional punches per episode. Because when you try to squeeze in five emotional punches, nobody, you can't feel any of them.
right. You get desensitized.
yeah, you do. And so I think that's one thing that they could work on for season two. I was pleased with the Melko storyline, except for the season finale episode. Like, If there had been, like, a Nico Mel scene at the very end where they were, like, they wouldn't even have to be getting back together, but where Mel hadn't made this decision to leave Melko altogether and to not have it be a thing. Because that's just stupid, because it means that Mel hasn't learned anything. You have to involve Nico in these conversations. If they had, here's the cliffhanger they should have done. Mel going up to Nico and saying, hey, can we talk? And then that's it. And then leave it there. Yes, and then we don't know what they're going to talk about, but we know that they're going to have a conversation.
Yes, but it leaves them a future. Yes. Yeah, that would have been great. That would have been great.
Exactly.
I would have just been squealing over that. I mean, we're really not asking for much here.
No, like, because what it would have done is give Nico the right to make decisions with Mel. That's where it should have ended at the end of the season. That's the lesson Mel was supposed to learn, and she didn't learn it. So like at the end of Red Rain, I was like, okay, there wasn't that much Nico in this episode, but we got a little bit of Greta. And in the next episode, maybe we'll get some kind of resolution where they have a real conversation, or maybe they won't, but like it'll be a cliffhanger. And they didn't give us that. So I was pleased with most of the Melko stuff, because remember, we thought Melko was dead in the water. We did not think they were endgame. The whole history rewriting thing fucked with us. We were like, why are they doing this so early in the season? And now what I'm realizing, it wasn't purposeful. They just do, it's just that the writers do a shit ton of stuff really fast. I think the writers moving at a different speed than the audience. And so now I'm like looking back on how, I think annoyed we were at the Melko breakup during the history rewriting spell, thinking like, why would Mel act so hastily? But also the writers were acting hastily too.
That's true.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm glad that they kind of like took us in one direction. They were like, nope, it's Meleda, and then they were like, nope, it's Melko. And so I like that sort of back and forth. I just did not like that final scene between Mel and Nico.
I mean, it's just like first you take away Nico. Then you give her Jada. Then you give her Nico too. And then you take away both of them? I mean, it's like, This is too much of a roller coaster. This is not the roller coaster I signed up for. Yeah. I wanted a dyke drama roller coaster with a love triangle that ended in happiness.
Yes! Well, at least happiness for two of the three people. Like, you know?
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, happiness for our main girl, right? Like, we wanted who we shipped with her.
Yeah. Or you know what they could have done instead of, like, Mel going over to Nico's and saying, hey, can we talk? Nico calling things off with Greta. Like, if we had gotten some kind of indication where, I don't even know how they would have fit it in, given how, like, the last two episodes played out. But some kind of indication as to, like, what Nico was going to do about Greta would have been nice.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think in that last scene, I think we were just meant to see the protection ring on her hand, but we didn't see that she had or did not have an engagement ring on.
Yeah. I don't think we saw it, because if we saw it, I would have remembered and made note of it.
Right.
Another thing they could have done. They could have had, in that scene where Greta sees Mel and Maggie and Harry, Greta kind of like flipped out and say, hey, this is like close friends and family. And then like they were like, okay, and the three of them walk out, but Mel is the last to leave. And then Greta says something to Mel and says, you know, like, I don't know what she would have said, but like, you really did that. You really kissed my fiance, like 2 days before our wedding.
Oh,
you
had to do that. To show that she knew.
Like,
that Nico told her.
Yeah. Even if they wouldn't give us a scene between Nico and Greta, where we know that the engagement is off, if they'd given us information about what Nico was about to tell Mel before Mel jumped in and gave her a whole love confession. Like, Greta could have given an indication as to whether Nico told her that the two of them kissed.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that the writers could have done differently or done better. But overall, I have to say I did enjoy this first season of The Charmed reboot, and I'm very much looking forward to the second season.
Oh, same. That's why I have so many opinions.
Exactly. I mean, if this had been the original show, I definitely would have watched it as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it has everything that I didn't find to be interesting in the original series. Speaking of the original series, there's a slight nod to it at the very end when they all go into the house. And, you know, Macy closes the door at the end telekinetically. That's a reference to all of the season finales in the original series had Prue, the eldest sister, who had, well, not all of them. Spoiler alert, Prue actually dies. So,
But
allegedly, I don't think it'll happen in this series because I think, the actress was like horrible to work with or something. So I think it was their way of firing her basically. And they had to write her off the show. So anyway, that's irrelevant, but yeah. So Macy closing the door telekinetically is a reference to the door closing scenes at the end of each season in the original series. And when I found this, when we watched it, Kristen immediately recognized it when she closed it. She was like, oh my God, it's just like in the original when Prue does it. And I was like, really? Wow. So I was looking it up and I find a source that said it and they referred to them as the infamous door closing scenes. So I don't know if they just got like, you know, critical reception by the fans, but I was like, I don't know how they're infamous. It's literally just like she's closing the door at the end of the episode. But anyway, so I like that nod to the original. I like their slight, you know, relations to the original show. But overall, like, overhauling improvements like, the style and storylines.
Yeah. As critical as I was of the final Melko scene, I did like that the show routinely surprised me. Like, so many of the plot developments I did not predict. And that's got to be a good thing.
That's a good way to put it, look at it.
Yeah. So, I mean, some things I liked, some things I didn't, but I was thoroughly entertained the whole time, so I can say that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good attitude to have.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I can't say I liked what happened, but you know what? They kept me on my toes, and for that, I thank them.
Yes, and we sure as hell are going to watch season two, so there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure. I cannot wait. Anyway, so that concludes our coverage of season one of Charmed, the Charmed reboot.
Wow. 22 episodes.
It's been a journey. Yeah.
It really has. So for those of you who have been listening and following along with us over the course of the season, thank you for being there with us. Let us know what you think of the season finale too. Curious to hear any other takes or tidbits or anything that you think we missed. But we hope you'll still join us for our coverage of other Queer Women of Color ships. So in our next podcast episode, we'll continue talking about the Bold Type and what's happening with Kat and her new flame, Tia. By the time we record our next episode, Adina is supposed to make an appearance. So
yes,
that's going to be drama. And we've got like other shows that are coming back on the air. Vita is doing its season two drop at some point this week. And so I'm going to have to like subscribe to Stars again so I can watch it. But highly recommend if you want to support a show that is made by and for the Latinx queer community, definitely recommend tuning in to Vita on Stars. And I think it's only like $8 for a month subscription on Amazon if you want to like subscribe for a month.
Yeah, and there aren't that many episodes per season. So you can binge it very easily in 1 month and only pay, you know, that monthly subscription one time.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us for season one of the Charmed reboot. This has been really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that they decided to reboot the show.
Yeah, I know, right? And we got so much more than what we asked for.
Definitely, definitely.
Anyways, thanks, and hope you'll be able to join us for the Bold Type next week.
Bye.